The crew all season long on WTMJ. It's Brewers Extra Innings. Now, live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Hey, winning ugly is still winning. It doesn't matter how it looks, as long as it adds to the W column. And that is tonight's game. Five hits apiece, an error that turned out to be the difference of the game for the Blue Jays, a 2-1 victory for the crew, a save for Abner Uribe, a quality start for Chad Patrick, another vulture win for Aaron Ashby out of the bullpen. This was sort of a Brewers-y game where, you know, the offense wasn't crazy, the pitching was really good, the defense was really good, and just simply put, Jerry Augustine, it just feels good to win one finally.
It does. You know, it doesn't make any difference how you win as long as you get a win. But, you know, you look at the two guys that pitched tonight, both of them threw the ball extremely well. We looked at Jack Patrick. I think tonight was one of the better pitches I've ever seen, games I've ever seen him pitch, locating the pitches, using them very effectively. And Dylan Cease broke a Blue Jay record tonight by throwing so many pitches over 99. Mm. So, I mean, he was dealing, made some really big pitches when he got himself in a little bit of trouble. But a well-pitched game by both clubs, and when it comes down to that late in the ball game, we always talk so much about it. If you put the ball in play, sometimes good things are going to happen, and that's what happened with the Brewers.
Yep, 855-616-1620 is the phone number, 855-616-1620, the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. The losing streak is over at six games. Like we said, it wasn't the prettiest game. The Brewers only had two plate appearances with a runner in scoring position until that two-run eighth inning with only one ball leaving the infield that whole frame and them scoring two runs thanks to an infield single by David Hamilton, an E2 by Brandon Valenzuela, and then a squib single through the right side for William Contreras to tie the game, and then an RBI ground out that just got over the mound for Bryce Terang to give them the lead, and Abner Uribe slamming the door in the ninth inning. I think, though, we have to start with Chad Patrick because, you know, I was a little confused when he was getting pulled in the seventh inning, and I can understand both sides of the argument of, hey, he only threw 50 pitches last time out. He has kind of begun this back and forth, short then long, and then short again, and trying to make sure that he's healthy enough. And the other side of that coin of saying pulling him sooner is he walks Okamoto for his second walk of the game, but to that point he had been rolling, and he gives up a hard-hit fly ball to Ernie Clement, and a lefty is up in Andres Jimenez. So I can see both sides of it. Nonetheless, 81 pitches working into the seventh inning for Chad Patrick, tying a career high, 6 2/3 innings. One of his better outings of his young career.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, right from the start, you can tell going into the game, we talk about how he had to be able to locate the pitches real well, use the full strike zone. I think it was one night where he really used the strike zone, and when he had to elevate the ball, he did that very well. And, you know, he pitched ahead most of the night. He was throwing the ball very, very well, using his fastball to good locations. And, you know, he has one thing I really like about him. He has a sense with some hitters that, you know, strike one, I'm going to throw it right down the middle. There was about four or five hitters today. He started a strike one. He threw the ball right down the middle. And that's unique where you have that sense with a guy hitting what you're going to do after maybe he's thrown a lot of breaking balls early in the count or a sinking fastball. He gets that strike one. When he needs it, he gets it. And he gets it usually with his fastball. And I thought when he needed it tonight, he got it. And he got it most of the time with that fastball.
When you look at the usage for Chad Patrick's cutter in particular, and Sophia Minter talked about this over on the television broadcast, how Chad slightly changed the grip of his cutter for this start, that it's more of a traditional four-seam grip, but, you know, with his behavior around his wrist of how he's able to get the cut on that ball naturally. I think, you know, you hear that as a pitcher and think, oh man, I hope it goes out. Well, 75% of them were strikes, which is great, given exactly what he was looking for, trying to get more command with it. And number two, he got 9 swings and misses on it. So it was behaving differently than what the hitters were anticipating. The reason why I bring up the 9 swings and misses is because the cutter is the number one thing on the scouting report for Chad Patrick. He's not fooling anybody that he has a very, very good late cutter. But when you're getting Vlad Guerrero Jr., and miss on back-to-back cutters.
That's right.
It's doing something special. What in particular about that pitch did you like tonight?
Tilt. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a slider, you know, one thing that we noticed that he does very well, he gets that late break. I think you brought up a great point. He's got that good fastball that he can get a little bit of movement on when he wants, gets it up, or he gets it to tail in on the guys, or he'll cut it just a little bit. But when he throws that cutter and he gets on top of that ball, sometimes earlier this year, he was throwing it, and the cutter would come out a little bit flat. It's more more of an east-west by pitch. Tonight he changed by changing the grip, made him get on top the ball more. And when you get on top the ball, you release the ball just a little bit different, and you get that downward plane. And that's where the difference comes. I think you got to find a way you throw a pitch that's comfortable to you. And you sometimes you'll fool around with different things. I see pitches on changeups or curveballs, whatever it is. You got to find a grip that really does what you want to do a little bit better. And I think what you see if you look at it, a little bit of a cutter is more of an east-west pitch. Tonight it was more north-south. And you get that break. The breakdown late really is very effective, and he had that tonight.
He still hasn't quite developed his slurve to its fullest potential at this point, but nonetheless, he's still got 12 swings and misses today, which is a great rate for him to live out despite, he topped out at 95.9 miles an hour today. And meanwhile, the guy on the other side, who we'll talk about the Brewers offense dealing with Dylan Cease today, I mean, he was topping out at 100, 100.1, 100.2. I mean, it was impressive stuff from Dylan Cease, but Chad Patrick went toe-to-toe for him, allowing one run over 6 2/3 on just a sacrifice fly. We mentioned last night, man, this might not be a good matchup for Chad Patrick given how aggressive the Blue Jays are, but he used it to his advantage. He's not a guy that needs strikeouts, but when he's able to get these offenses a little bit over-anxious of just, you know, a little too excited, like, oh, I got a fastball, and then they fly out and it's no big deal, or 6 groundouts tonight was one shy of a career high for him.
You know, we talk so much about this pitching staff and the youth they have in that starting rotation, other than, you know, you look out and then Woody, you have a lot of youth, the guys just learning how to pitch in the big leagues and how to start. One of the things that you find out about a young pitcher is coming off a loss or coming off a time when the team is not playing well, to step up to the plate and really give yourself a good outing. I thought right from the beginning, just when he walked out to the mound, he was on a mission. He was on a mission saying, you know what, I'm going to command the strike zone. I've got to be what I have to do against this ball club. I have to be throw strikes. I have to get ahead, and I have to be very consistent. Now, you just talked about the cutter, how it changed by going north-south. Well, once he got confident in that pitch, like you said, you had Guerrero swinging, missing twice on that pitch. Boy, that's a confidence barrier that they get. And I just thought he threw the ball. In fact, I thought this was one of the better games I've ever seen him pitch with Milwaukee.
I agree. I mean, you look at his start to this season has been tremendous. Just to give the numbers here real quick. Now, 4 games, 3 of them starts. He had the opener his last one. 19 innings, just 15 hits, 2 earned runs. 7 walks and 9 strikeouts is not where we want to be living right now, but at the same time, if he's not giving up loud contact, if he's not giving up homers, that's a good place to live. So then you go back to his postseason, right? He had such a great end to his season last year with both the DS and the CS. It was tremendous because he went 6 games, 9 innings, just 2 earned runs on 2 solo homers, 11 strikeouts, and just 1 walk. Chad Patrick as the reliever was really good, and he's parlayed that into a great start to his 2026 season. The Brewers offense was late arriving, and it's still kind of waiting to arrive given the way that they scored their runs in the 8th inning. We'll talk about still, it's not all sunshine and rainbows and butterflies today. Yes, they win, but there's still, the offense is still going through it. We'll talk about that next here on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. Brewers win 2-1. The losing streak is over. They are now 9-8 on the season. Rubber match tomorrow against these Blue Jays coming up at 12:40. With Jerry Augustine, I'm Dominic Catronio, 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. Will from Milwaukee, great win for the crew tonight. Good to see a few things go our way. Thought Gary called a great game behind the plate. Want to get your thoughts on that. We will get to that too. Question, who's available bullpen-wise tomorrow? You know, I think Ashby can go back-to-back, certainly. You're probably going to need to get McGill back on the horse sooner as opposed to later. I would not anticipate Uribe tomorrow. I would anticipate seeing an Easton McGee tomorrow. I doubt you'd see DL Hall 3 in a row, so they're certainly a little bit thin with Brandon Sproat coming back onto the mound tomorrow, so that's something to keep in mind, but that's for tomorrow. Let's talk about tonight. I just want to first tip my cap to Dylan Cease because 6 innings of shutout ball. The ball was just on a string for him today. I tweeted this earlier, and I just want to explain it with a pitcher, is that, you know, one of the ways that we measure modern fastball carry, right, that's what we talk about, mm-hmm. is called induced vertical break. And, you know, the bigger the number, the better. And, you know, average is about 16 inches of induced vertical break, and meaning that's how much the ball is resisting gravity on its way to the plate. Well, Dylan Cease was popping 20s, which is freakish. When you think about a 4-inch difference, that's the entire width of a barrel.
It
right?
is.
I mean, that is the total swing and
ridiculous
miss.
Is what it is.
And then you combine that with 99 miles an hour.
Yep.
And then you combine that with him locating it at the perfect top of the zone where
yep.
I know you're seeing ugly swings like, oh, why'd he swing it? That looks, it's a strike. Even if they took it and it was called a ball and the catcher challenged it, it's going to get overturned as a strike. Most guys get one of those three attributes. Maybe the really good ones get two of those three attributes. But the fact that Cease was sitting 98, 99 with 20 inches of vert, locating at the top of the zone, that's the definition of unhittable. And that's the last thing a struggling offense wants to see right now.
You know, when you talk about a Dylan Cease, what he's the kind of guy that his number one pitch that he has is his fastball. I think when you look at a guy who throws with that kind of velocity and gets that kind of movement on the ball, he is. But his pitch is a slider. He yeah. likes to throw the slider. When he gets that slider over, he's devastating. And when he started the game, he didn't have it right away. He had a pitch with his fastball. And that's what's so special about it. He got himself in a little bit of trouble. He got every once in a while, he'd throw that good breaking ball. He'd throw that good slider to the one side or the other, one or the other side of the plate and get it for a strike. When he got that pitch for a strike, that just makes that fastball more devastating. And he's the kind of guy that he goes out there. You saw him throw 106 pitches. I think that some of the reason why he went so many pitches tonight, because he just struck out six guys, was that location with that breaking ball. He had a pitch with his fastball. He had to locate it. He knows where to locate it. He not only pitched in and out down, but he was able to elevate the ball when he needed to. And every once in a while, he found that breaking ball. Just imagine him when he's got that good slider, and then he can use the fastball with that. That's devastating. And it seems like he started getting it at times tonight, but he just pitched a great ball game.
I mean, 8 swings and misses on the fastball,
that's
six
right.
more on the slider. I mean, you tip your cap. There's a reason the guy got paid $210 million.
That's
and
right.
The bullpen was warming in the fifth inning because of the pitch count the Brewers were driving up against him, which I think is part of the reason why the Brewers had success. And you look at yesterday's game, every day leads to the next right now where they got into the bullpen yesterday. I know Fluharty gave up only a single on a broken bat by Lockridge, but, now they got into Fisher, and then they got into Rogers, and they paper-cutted him to death. But in those first 6 innings, there was no multiple runners on base. There was just that brief threat for 6 pitches in the 5th inning when Ortiz singled, stole second, and then was left stranded after Hamilton and Sal were retired. When I look at what this offense needs to do, once again, a game without an extra base hit, mm-hmm. I mean, that's job number one. Job number two, in addition to the extra base hits, the home runs, of course, as well, but continue to do this where you're working counts because things are going to go in your direction eventually. The Brewers are best in the National League in pitches per plate appearance right now, and that's why they were able to get Dylan Cease, as dominant as he was, out after 6 innings. This could have been a 7 or 8 inning game for him if the Brewers did not drive that count up.
I think the key word with this ball club is patience at the plate. I think this team always has patience. It doesn't make any difference who they're facing or how they're facing. They have a great scouting report on them. They understand the way the guy's going to approach them from the mound, and they really do a nice job of being patient when they have to. There's times when they come out, they're aggressive. If there's a guy come out and he's a strike guy, they'll get aggressive early in the game. And when they score some runs, then as soon as he gets in, he'll change his style a bit. They go to patience. And I think that's one thing that I appreciate about this ball club since the beginning of the season, the way they've been working the counts and the way they've been getting this good, no matter who they face, it doesn't make any difference. They're going to make you earn that out. And I think that's what's so key about this club with the kids at the plate.
And when I look at this offense as well, especially the 8th inning, that got back to the Brewery way. Now, granted, it has something to do with the pitcher they're facing in Tyler Rogers, given he's a submariner, he's not necessarily a swing-and-miss guy. But you look at, as soon as Rogers came into that game, there were no swings and misses in that inning against the submariner. Some good luck, obviously, with mm-hmm. the infield hit for David Hamilton, the misplay by the rookie Valenzuela behind the plate, and Contreras just pushing one the other way. They did their job as far as getting back to the patient aggression, like you talk about, but yet when you put bat on ball, good things happen. The Brewers led baseball in unearned runs scored last year, and the difference in tonight's game was another unearned run.
Yeah, and it's just about how they do it. We look at that, the other night, they started off the game, and they scored a couple of runs, they hit a home run, a couple of balls were hit. They were all hit the opposite way, and I think that's one thing this club does this so well. Contreras with hitting that ball the opposite way, getting it through between the first baseman and second baseman. It's just their approach to it. They stay back, they let the ball travel, and they put the ball in play, and they try to take it the opposite way. It's a sign of a good team when you get in a situation, you understand what that pitcher's going to do. You get a submarine guy, coming at you, and the way he keeps the ball down, the way Rodgers keeps that ball down, you got to, number one, get ahead of him. And number two, you got to tell him to get the ball up a little bit. And when he gets the little ball up a little bit, you got to put the ball in play. And I thought that's what the Brewers did a good job of.
What's the other thing we talked about last night in regards to the lineup of something that needs to change in order for them to win a game? And that is the bottom half of the order
needs to
do their job.
Yeah.
Three hits from the bottom half of the order and also a walk from Brandon Lockridge. They started the rally in the eighth again. I know it was some batted ball luck, but hey, Hamilton going 1-for-3 with three balls in play versus 0-for-3 with three punchies, it's a really different story when you talk about the nine-hitter.
Putting the ball in play. I think we talk about it all the time. If the bottom of the order, success is going to come. Is it going to come every night? Probably not. But if you put the ball in play and have good at-bats, and I think the one thing that Murph talks about is sometimes when you're struggling, going up there, giving that good at-bat is so important. That good at-bat maybe set the stage for something later in the game. And what you have to do, you get a guy like Dylan Cease, he's going to come right at you, and we talked about him throwing 106 pitches in the six innings that he threw. You go at him and you're aggressive with him early, like you just said. That's an eight-inning game for Dylan Cease. So what you have to do is you have to be patient. You have to earn it. You have to understand how they're going to pitch the ball to you. And I thought the Brewers did a nice job of that.
Yeah, I mean, look at Brandon Lockridge, right? He only saw him twice. He saw 11 pitches,
a walk, and
a ground out. I mean, he helped in that cause. Even Garrett Mitchell, I know he had two strikeouts. He saw 11 pitches with those pair of Ks. I also want to shout out Joey Ortiz here for a second, because I know as rough as it's been for him with bases loaded and run scoring opportunities and everything that he's gone through the last year plus with his performance at the plate, one of the reasons he keeps getting chances and one of the reasons that there's enough here to make, you know, nerds like me believe in Joey Ortiz, and you can talk about how he chooses to swing at pitches, his ball strike's a little off kilter right now. But when you look at the numbers and you look a little under the hood right now and you look at the engine and you look at the bat speed, he's sneaky, has an 80-mile-an-hour bat speed on that single in the left field. I mean, he's got lightning hands.
He does good hands.
You can see little moments where it's just like, man, that's the rookie. That's the rookie Joey Ortiz back in 2023 that we saw, or I should say 2024, I should say. That was just like, yes, that's the dude. And then, you know, obviously he has other at-bats where you just go like, wait, really? That's the same guy? But I just want to point out, Joey hitting eighth and Hamilton or Renjifo hitting ninth right now, I think the reason they're doing that is to make sure that Joey can hit behind Garrett. Garrett can maybe see more strikes. Joey can have man on, have a distraction with somebody that can steal bags when he gets aboard. That obviously didn't happen tonight. But I just want to point out something I liked from Joey Ortiz, because it's really easy to bag on him at times.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you look at him, and I think sometimes, sometimes when you get in a position that he is, he understands it. He understands where he is and how sometimes he's not swinging the bat very well, and sometimes he's a little more exaggerated where he gets to the plate. He's a little more aggressive than he should be. When he's patient at the plate and really makes the pitcher work, he gets into that, like we always talk about, get it late in the pitch count. Get late, make him go to deep in the counts. He's a much better hitter. He puts the ball in play much better If they get off and get ahead 0-2, 1-2, he gets himself in a little bit of tough time because they're going to make some good pitches on him. And it's just that I think sometimes you get out there, you try to do too much, and he's the kind of guy, he gets in that situation where he's not relaxed. He just gets a little bit over-aggressive, and that shows.
Yep. We learned a little something about the bullpen tonight. Let's talk about Will's question and talk about Uribe getting the save. What does that mean for the Crew moving forward as they win 2-1 over the Blue Jays on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
I
know there's some closers right now. You had a hard time getting to the ballpark.
It was. Oof. I was going like 5-10 miles an hour from the Zoo Interchange here.
Don't like that. It kind of felt like August last year. Remember the flooding?
Yeah.
And
I
did not like that feeling here at the ballpark. Nonetheless, we're back. I'm Dom Catronio with Jerry Augustine. Just two dudes talking about the weather. I mean, nothing changes. Let's do a little buy or sell here. It's brought to you by our friends at Tony Wendorf and Keller Williams. If you are looking to buy or sell a home, Tony Wendorf is the one you can trust. They're one of the top real estate teams in Wisconsin. Empowered by Keller Williams, they bring faith, family, and a red carpet experience to every home deal. So step up to the plate with a winning team behind you. WendorfTeam.kw.com. Tony Wendorf and Associates. Now, one thing I'm buying right now is the fact that the Brewers bullpen is still very, very, very good. Mm-hmm. And they're a little battered and bruised right now, and trying to figure out what's going wrong with Trevor Megill. I would encourage a really good piece today by Kurt Hogue of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, analyzing Trevor Megill's fastball, kind of like what we were talking about yesterday. And it's a reminder that of all the fastballs he's thrown, he has not got a swing and miss on his fastball yet. He had the night off today. They go to Abner Uribe. They go to Aaron Ashby, who earns another win. More on him in a moment. But first of all, let's start with Uribe, because I saw two things different today from Abner than we had seen previously. Remember, Abner had allowed at least a run in three of his last four outings.
That's right.
Number one, I don't mean this in a disparaging way. I saw a dude that was convicted. I saw a dude that was locked in. And I don't want to say, oh, it's April 15th. What do you mean? Like, you're supposed to be locked in. Like, it's hard to lock in.
It is.
On a Wednesday night in April. It just truth is, especially when the team's on a six-game losing streak. But just from a subjective point of view, Abner looked like the part, looked like the Abner we know. And the second thing that I noticed, that slider looked back to normal. The slider was something that, I mean, he has struck out Ernie Clement twice on the same pitch. Ernie Clement does not strike out. He has a 3% strikeout rate last season. That is the hardest dude to strike out in the American League. He's got him twice on the same pitch because that slider is doing what it's supposed to.
Not only that, he came back to back with it.
All five pitches he threw to Ernie tonight were sliders.
Good style of baseball. Yeah, you know what? I think you put it perfectly there in saying that his intensity when he took the mound, you could just see it in him. And after his antics after game, I love him. I mean, there's nobody better in baseball probably than him right now. But there was a different intensity, even with the fastball, locating the fastball he wanted. When he wanted to go with the fastball, he went. You didn't see him throw it down the middle of the plate. He was playing on the inside, outside part of the plate, getting that good velocity on it. But his breaking ball was a different breaking ball tonight. You could tell he was convicted to, he had conviction to go out there and say, you know what, that's my pitch. When I get that over, I'm unhittable. And he was tonight. He threw it very well.
Aaron Ashby getting the eighth inning. All three outs were strikeouts. He had a soft single by Dalton Varsho. That was a tip of your cap swing because it was a sinker on his hands, and he just pushed it the other way. And he got ahead of Vlad Jr. 0-2, and I know what you're thinking. Like, you should have put him away. It's Vlad Jr., the son of a Hall of Famer. Maybe one day it could be the first ever father-son to be in the Hall of Fame. But to go from 0-2 to 3-2 to walk him, I understand frustration. Everybody wants to strike everybody out. I get that. But you can't make a mistake to Vlad.
No.
It wasn't the end of the world. They survived the inning. He was able to get Miles Straw. I thought that was a really interesting change by John Schneider over on the other side to go to Miles Straw, who's not necessarily the strongest hitter against lefties. I know that it's because Sanchez, they're more fearful of him against lefties. But the point being, Ashby, this is the funny stat, Ashby gets the win. I mean, there's a generational divide here, Augie. Your generation was all about the win. The pitcher win is all that mattered.
That's all.
My generation, hey, man, I know Ashby's happy that he's got four wins right now, but we could see the death of the pitcher win if Aaron Ashby leads the National League and wins at the end of the year, because he currently is with four of them.
You know, he's just in that position, though. You know, tonight he was kind of in that same position. I thought Murph and Chris Hook did a nice job today with giving D.L. Hall in the game in that situation. I thought that was just a tester to see how he'd react, how he would throw the ball. You know, Zerpa probably didn't want to use him tonight. Mm-hmm. So what they had to do is they wanted to see what D.L. would do and get him in that situation. See if they can utilize him in a situation. He'd come and finish out that inning or get a left-hander out, get an out or two in an inning, and then you can go to Ashby. I think Ashby felt comfortable. He was back in that position where, he didn't come right in after the starter, but you know what? After DL got the one out, he was right in the game. He got hit. That's his comfort zone, coming in and being that closer for the starter, and he's throwing the ball very well. I tell you what, tonight, just to pitch the way he did, he got himself a little bit of trouble. And with Vlad, you got to do what you think is best and try to make some good pitches. He tried to and didn't. It was just a little bit off, but boy, he struck him up and he just did a nice job punching him out.
And furthermore, for Uribe, that's now 4 out of 6 for him, so he's certainly going to be down tomorrow, maybe even on Friday as well. And for Zerpa, like you said, they probably didn't want to go to him because if he had pitched today, he also would have been 4 out of 6. For other guys in this bullpen, right, when you look at what Ashby has done now, 10 out of 17. He has appeared in 10 out of the 17 games already for the Brewers. That is not sustainable. The Brewers know that. He knows that as well. But I imagine he's in the hot tub again tomorrow because the Brewers, even though it would be 3 in a row for him if he gets in there, he only threw 9 pitches on Tuesday. I wonder if he's got a case of emergency, a one batter only, if he's coming up for that Varsho or Sanchez window.
Yeah.
Because tomorrow, they're going to need McGill tomorrow. They're going to need Zerpa tomorrow. They're going to need Easton McGee tomorrow. They're going to need Grant Anderson tomorrow. And they're going to need length from Brandon Sproat is most important.
Yeah, I think him, the way he threw the ball last time in relief, I thought he threw the ball very well, and they could really use him to get in that fifth or sixth inning if they can. I think one of the keys out there now is trying to get him kind of to where he was last year's Grant Anderson. I think Grant Anderson, when you could almost bring him in almost any time, right or left-hander, he threw the ball real. He struggled a little bit with his location at times this year, and I think he's one of those keys out there you talk about. You cannot sustain with Aaron like you're using him now. You need that sidekick that he has, just someone else that can come in that situation and give you a plus outing. And I think Grant Anderson last year was that guy. He came in so many different times in situations. So I think they're trying to find different things out. And I think with D.L. Hall tonight was just a tester. Where is he? And, you know, tomorrow will probably be Zerpa, and bring him in that situation, see how he's doing. And I think you know what Ashby can do. You know what some of these guys can do. You know what Uribe, boy. I thought tonight he was back to himself. And you got to get McGill back, and hopefully he can settle things down. But getting Hall in there tonight, I thought that was a nice little touch that I'd like to see, just to see what he would do.
Yeah, tonight's a night, honestly, with this team that has some key lefties like Lucas and Varsho and Jimenez, that not having Jared Koenig hurts.
Yes, you know, no doubt. We talked about
leaving spring training, like, wow, they have so many lefties. And then all of a sudden you have Ashby, who's throwing like every game.
Yep.
You've got Zerpa. And then you're kind of like, all right, well, does Hall get this leverage spot? Like, Hall generally hasn't been used in the way that he had been used tonight.
That's right.
Where he's coming for multiple innings, not necessarily for a matchup, that sort of thing. So the Brewers are trying to find that balance of what do they have with D.L. Hall, because he too, like Ashby, is the best of both worlds.
Yep.
He can get you a swing and miss when you need it. He can actually get righties out pretty well. He's done fairly decent against righties his last 2 years. And I think that the way that this bullpen has to work is there does need to be balance, and we can complain about Chad not being allowed to finish that seventh inning. The Brewers understand that they needed to make sure that, A, they kept that at a 1-0 game, because as we saw in the eighth inning, the offense isn't exactly firing right now. And, B, what do they have down there? Who is going to step up? As we heard Pat Murphy say yesterday, it's like, I don't know who I would give the ninth inning to right now, because no one's exactly deserving of it. So we can find out who's deserving of it over the next 4 to 8 days.
Well, you know, we talked so much. They had that, you know, when you have they're healthy, and they got McGill, and they got Koenig, and they got Uribe. That's that three-headed monster. You know what they can do at the end of the game. And we talked about it last night, that usually you go late in the game, you get that eighth inning, the game should be over. You know, but they're missing that key piece. And that key piece is Jared Koenig. So they got to find someone who will step into place, whether it's going to be Ashby they're going to use differently, or it's maybe D. Hall is going to step up, or maybe Zerpa's all going to come and be that guy. I think this is a time and early in the season where they got to test these guys and see how they feel and see if they can jump into those situations and help this ball club.
All right, mentally telling folks listening, you know, like just take mental note here if you're listening in podcast form or if you're, you know, listening live. When you look at tomorrow's lineup, don't have a jump scare. We're warning you right now. They're facing a lefty tomorrow.
That's
Patrick
right.
Corbin. So you might see Luis Matos in there.
Yeah.
You might see Renjifo in there. You might see, like, whoa, what's going on with this line? Like, they're facing a lefty. And then all, you know, Garrett will come off the bench. Maybe Perkins will start the game in center field, right? So the Brewers are going to try to solve this riddle that is, when they're facing a lefty, can they get back on track with the guy in Patrick?
Yeah, trying to make some adjustments, giving some playing time to guys and see how they adjust. You got Corbin, who's a lefty, who's got a good breaking ball. He keeps the ball away from him. He changes the speeds. And, you know, he's not overpowering, but he's a strike thrower. So it's going to be interesting what the lineup is tomorrow. But I think you're right. I think getting the lineup might look a little different tomorrow, but they're facing a lefty. And anytime you face a lefty, you have to make those adjustments.
Meanwhile, Brandon Sproat for the Crew, and it's a rubber match tomorrow again, 12:40. The first pitch, and thank goodness for the roof. I know there was some drips around the ballpark today, but hopefully we are through the heavy torrential downpours and get through back to the springtime showers as opposed to the downpours. And let's get to the Mayflowers. I want to play some golf, man.
Like, I know.
Goodness gracious. Augie, appreciate you as always, my friend.
Oh, it's always fun.
We'll talk to you this weekend, I believe.
Yep, I'll be with you this weekend. And, you know, it's going to be fun. You every time you go through these little problems where you lose six in a row, this is a team that you don't think will ever lose six in a row, but they're struggling a little bit, and they got to get back on track. And I'll tell you what, to win a game like you did tonight, that's the Brewer way. They come in battling back and put the ball in play. They did a good job. Hopefully they can win tomorrow and win the series.
Winning ugly is still winning. That's winning. Just win, baby. Al Davis, right? Jerry Augustine, appreciate you, my friend. And we'll talk to you this weekend.
Yeah, we'll talk to you this weekend.
All right. Let's get some of these texts, get to some thoughts as well around the league, because 9-8 ain't that bad. We'll explain on the other side of the break on 620 WTMJ. 9-8. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll hear from Pat Murphy. We'll get to some highlights a little bit later on. Chad Patrick is certainly the player of the game It's no surprise, though. Abner Ribe should be a runner-up in this case as well. William Contreras, a couple of hits today as well. That is certainly some good news. The Brewers as a team, when you look at 9-8, when you look at, we don't care about standings, but we just kind of look at what the rest of the league is doing, okay? Only one team is above 500 in the NL East. That's the Atlanta Braves, and they're 12-7, which is good, not tearing the cover off the ball. The Central's the best division in baseball, maybe. I'm pausing for dramatic effect because it might be true. Pittsburgh 11-7, Cincinnati 11-7. Sal Stewart, pick them up on your fantasy teams if you haven't already. St. Louis 10-8. No one thought that 18 games in. Now I'm sure the pitching will catch up to them. Milwaukee at 9-8, Chicago at 9-9. It's a pretty darn good division. And here's the thing: I know we all entered this season not expecting St. Louis to compete. But at the same time, I watched St. Louis, and I watched J.J. Weatherholt. I watched Jordan Walker being reinvigorated. You don't have to ask Brewers fans much about some of the other studs that they have around that team. They're not, like, tanking Colorado Rockies losing 120 games bad. Like, St. Louis is going to flirt with a 500 record this season. So don't think that they're just an automatic write-off. Then you look at over the West, San Francisco and Colorado are both 6-12. And then somehow Arizona just finished off a three-city trip where they won all three series. And San Diego both have 11 wins, just hanging along with the, you know, inevitable Dodgers at 13-4. So let this season create some space. Nobody's gotten terribly hot yet. Granted, San Diego's on a W6, and the Brewers just snapped their L6. Like we said yesterday, there's no reason to believe the Brewers don't have a, you know, a 21-8 for a month somewhere in there, right? Just because that this has been a frustrating week doesn't mean the whole season is over. And the other thing that blows my mind about last season, I had to confirm this earlier today, but I found it. The Brewers, even with that 0-4 start last year, had a record of above 500 in every month. Even with that 0-4 start, even as bad as it felt in the middle of the year, in the middle of May, they still had an above 500 record every single month of the year. And I just don't think anybody would have believed me if I told you that, right? 16-15 for March and April, combining those two. May, there were 15-13. June, there were 16-9. July, there were 17-7. August, there were 21-9. And then September, there were 12-12. Nothing below 500. And they had a positive one differential in all of those months, including March, April, when you get to include those poor four games when they were minus 32, because they still finished at plus 24 for the month of March/April. It's just a reminder, it's such a long season. There is so much time to get through the year. On some thoughts about the bullpen right now, and again, I think you're going to see Trevor McGill in tomorrow's game. I really do. I think the Brewers understand getting him right is sooner as opposed to later, and Pat Murphy stopped short of actually naming McGill has lost the closer role, but he also stopped short of saying, oh, Uribe is going to be the closer in tonight's postgame. But the fact of the matter is, they understand that this bullpen does not work with just Uribe and Ashby and Zerpa getting your leverage. They need McGill in that. When they get Koenig back, they'll need him in that as well. And everything gets shuffled around, and everything works out in the Brewers' favor when it comes to their depth in the bullpen. But this one made me chuckle. Feels like every time Ashby comes out in leverage, I flip a coin. I'm glad it came up heads today, but nervous about how the bullpen has been doing lately. It feels like there'll be one of those stressful games still to come. Yeah, it's a baseball season. There are 162 of these. Some of them are going to be stressful. This one from the YouTube live chat from Mitchell. Chad Patrick is a baller, versatile, saw his ability as a reliever, throwing 97 with a nasty slurve, and then he comes back this year to the rotation. The Cruz tonight, nice to get 6 2/3 from a starting pitcher. And then another one, Chad Pat is a dog. I like that. And I also, the other thing about Chad that's so fun and that I really enjoyed watching, as soon as he saw Pat Murphy come out, because he could sense, you know, when he's getting pulled from a game, lefty on deck, lefty warming in the bullpen. He sees Murph come out. He instantly yells an expletive to himself and claps. He's like, no, no, I want to stay in. And then realized that Murph wasn't going to change his mind, and he went and got the lefty, and Chad was done. But love to see a little fire from the guy. The dude has been traded twice. He's on a team that admires him. He wants to stick around. He wants to stay in the big leagues as long as possible, right? Got to love it. Love watching Chad Patrick pitch in the game. Well, let's get to some highlights. This was a wacky one for the Brewers. Late arriving, but they still arrived. I wouldn't even call it fashionably late. It was just late, but they still showed up. Brewers win 2-1. Back after this on 620 WTMJ. I don't care how you win, as long as you win. 2-1, the final in today's game. I'm Dom Catronio. Going for another 20 minutes or so. We got Murph to come up in a little bit. But first, let's tell you exactly what happened with the highlight recap.
Ready for this?
Out of here!
This?
Brought it back! Ho, ho, ho!
And this?
It is gone!
Time for tonight's highlights.
Chad Patrick getting the ball for the Crew up against the ace Dylan Cease on the other side. And the Blue Jays open the scoring in the first on a sac fly from Jesus Sanchez. That might have been a gift in hindsight. More on that later. But it's 1-0 Toronto. The Brewers trying to get things going in the offensive direction. They left a man on in each of the first two innings. In the third, their defense helped out their man on the mound with a ground ball double play.
A one. It's ground ball to third. Up with it is Hamilton to second for one. Ortiz to first in time. A 5-6-3 double play. And the Brewers turn two.
An oddity because it's a 5-6-3. That's back-to-back nights that you go third base to shortstop because of the shift. The Brewers only had one such double play all of last season. Nonetheless, moving on, more defensive help in the fifth inning. It's still 1-0. One out, nobody on. Andres Jimenez against Chad Patrick. A fly ball down the line that I went down to my scorebook and was already marking foul ball. Brandon Lockridge said, not so fast.
Now pitch to Jimenez, hit to left. Lockridge, long run. He's towards the line and leaping. Did he catch it? Yes! Brandon Lockridge, Spider-Man style in the corner, takes a foul ball away from Andres Jimenez. Jumped up on the wall and made the catch against the wrought iron fence. Outstanding play by Brandon Lockridge.
Huge, and then the inning would end two batters later. Chad Patrick still rolling along. He only allowed three base runners in this game after the first inning. He was facing Vlad Jr. for a third time in the sixth.
1-2 pitch to Guerrero. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. Chad Patrick, six starling innings against the Blue Jays. Ends with a strikeout of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
He came back out for the seventh, got two outs, but after a walk, he was pulled from the game, but no damage in the seventh. Brewers, though, still waiting to arrive to the party. Cease went six strong. Then Mason Fluharty left the man aboard. Braden Fisher got out of the seventh inning. In the eighth, it was the Submariner Tyler Rogers on the mound. It began with an infield single from David Hamilton, a little swinging bunt up the third base line. Next up, top of the order, Sal Frelick, and finally a break goes their way.
1-0, runner goes, swing and a chopper in front of the plate. It is a fair ball, and it's bobbled by the catcher. Everybody's safe. Valenzuela was waiting to see if that ball was going to have any spin and spit it foul. And by the time he decided to pick it up, it was a fair ball, and he didn't push it into the ground to make sure he had a grip. We will see how they rule it. It could be a base hit. It also could be an E2. And it is an E2.
Indeed. So first and second, nobody out. The next batter was William Contreras.
Rogers looks at his runners and deals. Ground ball right side. It is through, base hit. Hamilton around third. He will score. And we're tied one apiece.
At this point, that was the hardest hit ball of the inning at 92 miles an hour. They weren't hitting it any harder with the next batter. Men on the corners for Bryce.
2-0. Ground ball over the mound. Frelick's coming home. He will score. Out at first is Terang, and the Brewers have a 2-1 lead. Frelick froze to make sure it got over the mound. And as soon as it got past the glove of Rogers, Frelick was coming home.
He gets home. It's all the Brewers needed. They would hang on with Abner Uribe on for his first save of this season, his first save opportunity since the six-out save he got in Game 5 against the Cubs last year.
Here comes a 2-1 pitch to Jimenez. Swing and a line drive into the left. Lockridge into the gap. He's there. Makes the catch. And the slide is over. The Brewers with a 2-1 win over Toronto. And after Uribe can put one in the holster, the Brewers, that's one. Good to get back into the win column. A 2-1 victory over the Blue Jays, and they can go for a series victory tomorrow afternoon.
That exactly is the game plan. We'll hear from Pat Murphy coming up next. The Brewers win 2-1. Five hits apiece in this one. It wasn't the craziest game from an offensive perspective. Kudos to Dylan Cease and to Chad Patrick for their performances tonight. We'll hear from the manager up next on 620 WTMJ. Brewers Extra Innings is brought to you by Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Spring's almost here, especially with the showers, but for a limited time, Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical is giving a free AC system with the purchase of a new gas furnace. Stay comfortable year-round, but hurry, spots are limited, so call today, SEIDER.com, online as well. That's where you can schedule your appointment. Again, Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical for a little who's hot, who's cold. You know, I teased it a moment ago in the highlights that Jesus Sanchez hitting that sac fly in the first inning, I meant to bring this up with Augie, but that's a 3-0 count with one out and runners on the corners. And he swung and hit a sac fly. I understand he scored a run, but he swung at a ball. I mean, I get it. He scored a run. But bases loaded, one out or two outs, a run in and a runner on first. Right? I think one kind of capped it there. I wonder what the inning could have looked like if they had loaded the bases there. Or maybe Chad would have got a double play ball from Okamoto and we never even had this conversation, right? So it goes both ways. But as who's hot, I mean, it's got to be Chad Patrick right now. Like we just said, only two earned runs allowed on the season so far. The cold is still, we can talk about how great Chad pitched. Toronto's feeling their injuries right now, too. No George Springer, no Alejandro Kirk, no Addison Barger, in addition to the pitching injuries that they're dealing with right now. But, you know, Vlad Jr. can't do it alone. Vlad does not have a homer in a while. He hasn't hit a homer, actually, since the White Sox series 2 weekends ago. They're in an interesting spot where they have power on the team, but Varsho and Jimenez are the ones leading the club in homers, which I don't think was anyone's bingo radar for the Blue Jays coming into this season. So that's a little quick who's hot, who's cold from Cider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Pat Murphy said it straight today in the post-game press conference about finally getting back in the win column. Here's the skipper's quotes.
I mean, I don't know that we're out of the funk we're all in. It feels nice to win a ball game and have the guys regain some belief. And, hey, they won the game during the game by sticking in there and having at-bats. They got Cease out of there. He's one of the top pitchers in the game. I don't know. You don't pay the guy $25 million or whatever they're paying him unless, you know, the guy's dominating the game. Well, you get him out of there by battling all game, even if you don't have success. You keep clawing away. You stay relentless and just peck away. And that's what got us to the point where, you know, we got some of the relievers that we saw again. And we didn't hit balls real hard, but we did some really good things. We ran the bases. Contreras came up with a huge hit. But, you know, Ashby and Uribe at the end was really, really special. Uribe's tempo and energy leave no doubt that he's healthy, you know, especially after throwing last night.
How about Chad? And
just, you go ahead and interrupt me. That's fine.
I don't know if he had more or not.
It's my moment.
How about Chad and the way that he threw?
It was great. 6-2. It was great. I was going to get to that. I'm not a total idiot. Chad was great. You know, he attacked the zone after the first hitter. He attacked the zone and let his stuff work. And they're an aggressive, good hitting team, and they're kicking themselves for being so aggressive and letting them have 10 pitch innings, you know. But I thought there was a lot of, you know, Ortiz was great on defense and Hamilton was great on defense. There's little things that happen in the game. Lockridge, two great plays on defense, one incredible play. We just battled, you know. Gary did a nice job behind the plate. Perkins came off the bench, pinch hit. Great swing. Explain what?
Sorry for jumping there. The physics on that sal ball, it didn't look super wet there. Just how that ball died there.
I just know that Sal's a battler. And I believe in him, and you know he seldom has hit as low as he's hitting now, and has produced as little. But go figure, he's in the middle of it when we needed it most. And you got to kind of rely on the character of people, you know what I mean? And these guys showed a lot of character by showing up tonight and hanging in there and playing solid and pecking away and not getting frustrated. Yeah, Hamilton, you know, it's huge. the way he runs, to use his speed to, put the ball in play.
Why did you decide to go with Uribe on this particular night, the ninth?
Because I knew we could get it done. I was certain Uribe could get it done. I didn't want to put that on Trevor with all he's going through, and stayed up for hours last night trying to correct anything he corrected in his delivery or anything he was tipping or whatever. And he was, exhausted today. I looked at him like, looked in his eyes like, this guy's wearing it. He cares, you know. And I knew Uribe would shine through. So it was great performance.
Or did it feel like it's been a while since you guys got some breaks?
A month. It's felt like a month, but truth is that the game's not going to be nice to you. That's not, if we're looking the game for the game to be good to you, it's not going to be, like players talk about it all the time. You hear them, if you're looking for no pressure, don't come here. If you're looking for a game that's easy, play something else. And that's what makes a team, when you see him respond like nice like tonight. We didn't play our best. We didn't swing it great, but we face great pitching tonight. We face great pitching. That reliever that just came in, go look at what he's done over the last 10 years. The guy that throws from underneath Rodgers, go look at how good he's been for the last 10 years. The guy's special. And Cease still throwing 98 in the whatever his last inning was.
When you get to the sixth and the seventh tonight, are you thinking, man, is there something we can do here? Then the eighth comes. It comes to you, right? The gate comes to you with those short hits and you ball around.
I don't know if you're referring to leaving Chad Patrick in or not, but he's coming off 50 pitches. They're not built up yet. It's April. I didn't want to tax him too much more. Pitching coaches were pretty adamant about getting somebody else in there. D.L. Hall hasn't been in that role that much, but he's been on the mound a bunch, and he's a tough kid, so I'm happy for D.L. that he got some outs. He didn't exactly throw the ball great, but he got out of it, kept the ball in the yard, and Ashby was great.
Agreed on all fronts there from the manager, Pat Murphy, as the Brewers get the victory. We'll wrap up the program after this on 620 WTMJ. All right, last minute or so here of the show. Brewers back tomorrow, 12:40, the first pitch. You can find all these in podcast form. Brewers All Access, wherever you get your podcasts as well. Now, tomorrow, Brewers Weekly, again tomorrow night, 8 o'clock on the radio. But again, these shows are not live anymore. They're taped. And there's a YouTube element that gets posted first thing Friday morning as well. So I'm going to encourage you to check those out. You can catch it live if you want at 8 o'clock tomorrow. It will also be in your podcast feeds. It still works as an audio program. There's just some more bells and whistles over on the YouTube side of things, adding some highlights, adding some interviews. And hopefully we're talking about a series victory tomorrow with these Toronto Blue Jays. Then it's on the road down to Miami, 6:10 on Friday night. 3:10 on Saturday afternoon, and then 12:40 again on Sunday for the Marlins, and then the next off day is on Monday, and then the Brewers will be taking on the Detroit Tigers. That'll be for Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So that is your upcoming schedule. No post-game show tomorrow, but we will have a Brewers Weekly tomorrow night at 8. Catch it live on YouTube on Friday morning as well. Our producer has been Matt Yazel. I am Dom Catronio. We'll talk to you next time. Until then, keep on swinging.